Let's begin.
This is the Boss.
I'm the Boss.
And the Gloss.
My lip gloss, I only rock clear.
On SB Nation Radio.
And SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Here are your hosts, David Gao and Carla Dawson.
I got that.
And it is time to fire it up. Monday evening, I'm sitting next to the Monday Night Delight, Carla Dawson. How are you?
I am good. We've got the trifecta this week. I am loving this. Monday Night Football tonight, World Series tomorrow night, and NBA season kicks off on Wednesday.
You're a little spoiled, I might say.
I am very spoiled.
Jose, she seems a little chipper, don't you think?
I'm not going to lie. She's more chipper than I thought she would.
Even after a Raider loss, look how chipper I am.
Well, because you're offsetting that with your love for the Astros their advancing to the World Series on the Altuve home run.
Oh, my goodness. You know what? That was something. That was a moment.
We broadcast out of Houston, Texas, of course. Well, what happened with the Astros was amazing. It reminds me, though, 2 years ago in 2017 when the Astros were on their way to their World Series, nobody slept. Remember all those late night games? And these are late night endeavors. Over and over and over again. They take a long time. They're thrilling. You can't turn them off. But this was a city that was filled with zombies 2 years ago, and I think we're on the cusp of that again.
I think we are, too. Well, and that has to go with where pitching has evolved, where you're changing a pitcher almost every inning. I think the Astros went through 7 or 8. Same with New York. So that adds a bunch of time to it. But you did not want to turn that game off. You are in bottom of the ninth, tied game, 2 outs. Here comes Altuve, and wow.
An amazing victory for the Astros. Later this hour, we're going to get a chance to visit with Charlie Polillo. He hosts the wildly popular show on KFNC in Houston. We'll talk to him about this matchup, Astros-Nationals. Also, next hour, we get a chance to visit with Steve Garvey. Remember the legendary Dodger?
How can I not remember Steve Garvey? Yeah, what a looker.
And not bad
at baseball himself either.
Not bad at baseball either. We'll get a chance to get his insights on the big series coming up.
I want to talk to him about the Dodgers, too. What an epic letdown.
Yeah, we'll get that from Steve Garvey in hour two. Next up, we're going to give a preview of the Monday night game to come and a quick look back at some of the big NFL matchups from yesterday. You're listening to The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
This is The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
All right, a fun Monday night matchup about to get underway. The Patriots visiting the Jets. And, of course, the Jets are coming off that big win in Dallas. And the narrative is the Jets are back. They've got Darnold. All things are well. And they're going to go off on a big win streak. True?
You see an upset coming tonight?
No, I do not, as a matter of fact.
I do not either. I'm glad that the Jets are fired up and everyone's happy about the Jets, but this is Overreaction Monday, and I don't see it happening. You know, New England's the only undefeated team in the AFC. That's it.
Well, the Jets do get C.J. Mosley back in the linebacker position, and they will need him. But the Patriots' offense has not been prolific. I mean, their defense has been outstanding. They haven't had a tough schedule thus far.
No, they've played one team with a winning record. One.
So they face a Jets team that has not done well, but they get Darnold back. They come off the big win of Dallas. But the thing about the Patriots at this point, to me, is do they have the receiving core that can take them where they want to go? High expectations, obviously, for the Patriots. But when you look at the roster on the receiving core, I mean, they viewed Antonio Brown, that pickup, as sort of a luxury. Well, now he's gone. They did trade away Demaryius Thomas when they got Antonio Brown. So Brown is gone.
They're not happy about that right now.
Thomas is gone, right. They traded him under the pretense they didn't need him anymore with
Josh
Antonio.
Josh Gordon's banged up. Josh Gordon's out. Edelman's banged up. You know, but I mean, a banged up Edelman is probably still pretty good. But yeah, they are. They are missing at the receiving spot for sure.
Listen, this is the one thing I am convinced of at the trade deadline is that the Patriots are going to go pick up somebody to help the receiving core, whether it's a tight end or a wide receiver, to be determined. I mean, an O.J. Howard from the Buccaneers would be an interesting pickup. Patriots utilize tight ends as well as anybody. Doesn't look like Gronk is coming back, although the whispers persist. There might be a Devontae Parker out there. There might be an Emmanuel Sanders.
Mm-hmm. Emmanuel Sanders is getting – Denver's listening.
Denver has to be listening. They're sellers. I mean, A.J. Green, look at that. Sure. The Bengals are going nowhere. Now, Green's out for a couple weeks.
0-6 start.
Look, that would be a great pickup, and it would be in line with what Belichick has done in the past. He's gone out and traded for good receivers. Why not pick up A.J. Green at this time?
And while their offense is – quote, sputtering for a Patriots offense, the defense already has 14 interceptions on the season. They've only allowed 3 touchdowns scored on them.
No,
I mean, it's just astounding.
Defensively, Belichick has a very veteran lineup. There's guys with a lot of experience, and Belichick's having fun moving them around and playing his chess game. Now, the one story that came out of New England that I thought was a little bit odd this week was Tom Brady, actor.
His little cameo.
His little cameo. Now, this is a Netflix show that he did, and he comes out of a massage parlor. Is that not right?
It's so strange. It's Paul Rudd's Netflix series called Living With Yourself.
Yes.
And it is pretty bizarre. Paul Rudd drives up to a strip center, and there's an Asian day spa.
It's not called the Orchid Day Spa, but it might as well be, right?
Right. And I don't know what it's called.
Happy Day Spa.
Top Happy Spa.
Top Happy.
Goodness. Which is kind of interesting. And Brady walks out of it with the cat that ate the mouse smile.
What does that suggest?
I'm just not going to go there.
Okay.
You take that
one. He walks out very, very happy. A grin, all flush. He winks to somebody who pulls up, right?
That's Paul Rudd.
He's in
the car looking very nervous about should I go in or not, you know. And Brady looks at him and says, first time? And Paul Rudd says, you know, yes, yes. And do you remember what he says to Brady? He said, your first time? He goes, 6 times.
Nice. Okay, 6 Super Bowl rings, of course. Yeah.
And then he gets into a black limo.
A black limo, which... How can Robert Kraft, who wants this most embarrassing moment of his life, feel any good about this? All it does is resurface and remind us of what happened there at the Orchid Day Spa, where he came out, got in a limo, and drove away. This is bad form. Is Brady mocking the owner of the Patriots?
Oh, well, did you not hear Brady's answer when the media asked him about it? It was taken out of context, and you and the media twist everything. I mean, I don't know what could be untwisted personally, but it's interesting. The creator of the show, Timothy Greenberg, told reporters he couldn't believe that Brady agreed to do the shoot. I mean, it was kind of in the wake of the Kraft arrest.
Because it would be the last thing that Robert Kraft would ever want Tom Brady to do. I just don't see how Kraft is not fuming at Tom Brady right now.
Well, no one's talking about it, which means there is some fuming going on behind the scenes. I'm quite sure of it. And, you know, Tom Brady tried to put this, you know, said the media is putting this blame and shame on him. You know, this is what, okay, so Tom Brady on the field, can't deny this talent is ridiculous. Off the field, I want him to be more authentic and not disingenuous. Like, for example, a couple years ago when he had the MAGA hat in the locker, and when he was asked about it, said, why do you need to ask me about Trump? I don't have any ties to Trump. Well, then, just say, I support him. It has nothing to do with what I do on and off the field. Leave me alone. Just be genuine about it. Does he need to be, or is this just fine?
Well, one observation is that when Robert Kraft, when this came out, he had to look at it. He had to pick up the phone and call Tom.
You think he's seen it?
I don't see how all of America, or we've met, it's been wildly made available.
But no one's talking about it.
This is why I think he's seen it. I cannot believe that it's not a hot topic, that it's not something that is being aired on ESPN, that there's not more banter about it. It got out on the internet. The video was passed around. Twitter lit up because people are noting, oh my gosh, can you believe Tom Brady did this to Robert Kraft? He's mocking his owner. Yet you don't see it reported anywhere. Mm-hmm. It almost suggests there's a hush job underway.
No, I think that's right, because it's so egregious. I mean, it is shocking. I think that maybe the key for Tom Brady is just stick to the on-field antics.
You don't think you should do any more acting coming out of day spas.
I'm thinking maybe not.
All right. Well, the Patriots will face the Jets. This one has just begun. Brady is on the field, and here come the Patriots. They're marching down the field. Actually,
No, they're not.
They just dropped the ball. But we shall see. It is early in this one. A nice matchup, Patriots and Jets. So when we come back, we're going to get a chance to visit with Charlie Palillo. Now, Charlie,
wait to get his take on the hometown boys.
Well, he is the guru of all things Houston sports, probably the smartest guy in the sports scene in the city of Houston, deeply knowledgeable about Astros baseball, and he will break down the Astros National Series like no one else. What I want to ask him is, when you look at the big three pitchers on the Astros, and they are a big three, I mean, Verlander, Cole, and Greinke are outstanding. And I don't know if I put them in that order. I'll put Cole number one. But you look at the big three there for the Nationals, and it's an equally good group.
Scherzer, Strasburg, and do you have Corbin or do you have Sanchez?
Well, I'm going Corbin because he really came in as the big three. Sanchez, Anibal Sanchez, I guess at age 35, pitched so well.
Oh, my gosh.
And has pitched well here in this postseason. Yeah, maybe it gives the Nationals really a fourth pitcher that they can deploy and use. But that big three versus big three matchup is going to be very exciting. We'll ask Charlie to break down and tell us which of the big three has the edge in this series. It'll be Charlie Palillo of KFNC Houston when we return here on SB Nation Radio.
This is the Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
All right, one out of four batteries is going to fail this winter. Get yours tested for free during Superstart Battery Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts. If it needs to be replaced, O'Reilly has the Superstart battery for you. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. All right, joining us now on the Progressive Insurance Guest Line is radio show host from KFNC Houston, Charlie Palillo. Charlie, welcome in. You're on with David and Carla.
I've been awaiting this invitation for more than 2 years now.
Well,
great to be with you both.
Let me frame it up this way.
Especially you, Carla.
Charlie has been in...
Charlie's my new best friend, by the way.
I know. He's a sports talk legend here in Houston, Texas. But he's never been on the Boss and the Gloss of SB Nation Radio. This is the height of your career now, Charlie. You do realize that.
If asked, I've always been ready to serve.
Well, we are delighted to get you, and what better time than now on the eve of the big series, Nationals-Astros. I'm so intrigued by this series, the starting pitching particularly, and the question I wanted to ask you was, when you look at the big three and the Astros and you compare the big three to the Nationals, which has the edge?
Well, I think in the opener, you take Gerrit Cole against Walter Johnson reincarnated. Sandy Koufax could lube up the arm. I mean, he's in his 80s now. Peak Roger Clemens. Right? You take Gerrit Cole against a literal pitching god about now. But Max Scherzer is a very reasonable foil, right? Perspective. Justin Verlander, three career no-hitters. Scherzer has a couple. And they were in the same rotation in Detroit, never won a World Series. For two games to have Cole and Scherzer followed by Verlander and Strasburg. I guess if we went to look back how close to their peaks they were in 2001, obviously the Diamondbacks had Randy Johnson, the best in the game at the time, and Curt Schilling. Roger Clemens wasn't at his total peak then. Mike Mussina would have factored in, or Andy Pettis, whoever you consider the top two. But for a 1-2 pitcher's dual pairing for the first two to start the World Series, this is all-time stuff. But I think throw in last ups for the Astros, you give Cole the slight edge over Scherzer, and I think you'd give Verlander the slight edge over Strasburg.
Oh, I like it. Charlie, you are as good as advertised and even better. I'm so glad you're on. So question for you. The Nats have been sitting cold for 6 days. It'll be seven tomorrow after taking out the Cards in four games. Does this hurt them or help them? Who has the edge with this?
I really think this is a rearview mirror one, and in basketball, sometimes you run into the same thing. A team sweeps a series or wins in five and hangs out for a week, 8 days, while the other conference has a knockdown, drag-out, seven-gamer. So in retro, we can say, well, was it more rest or was it more rust? I lean a little bit advantage Astros because it's not like they haven't had a little bit of time to come down from the euphoria of the way they won over the Yankees Saturday night. a little more in rhythm. And I know the Nationals, they've been having simulated games, and you can fire up the Jugs gun, the pitching machine, to 105 miles per hour if you want. I just don't think that's quite the same as game conditions as when Cole is throwing it and then Verlander is throwing it. So in the early innings, you know, maybe the Nationals will struggle the first time through the lineup to catch up with Cole's fastball, to adjust to his diving, breaking stuff. But then again, that could just be the awesomeness right now of Gerrit Cole, and the Nationals could be as fresh as daisies and sharpened to a razor's edge and still not produce. I would add, though, that the Nationals, while lacking the glamorous depth of the Astros lineup, the Astros finished third in the American League this year in runs scored. The Nationals finished second in the National League in runs scored. That 1-2 punch of Rendon and Soto is as good as any two Astros in their lineup. I think the story of the series will be, what do the other guys in the Nationals offense, what can they get done, especially against the Astros' top tier starting pitching?
Yeah, Charlie, so when you go back to looking at the team's hitting, so the Astros' regular season blueprint is basically power and, you know, putting the ball into play. You know, that won them 107 games. It worked. This postseason has been very different than what the regular season blueprint was, where they 22 of their 41 runs came off of home runs. What do you attribute to the heavy output, the heavy home run output in October?
I think step one is the Rays led the American League in earned run average, so that was a pitching staff that was the truth. And the Yankees were pretty good as a pitching staff. But in a short series of games, over 162, water is going to find its level. Over a best of five or a best of seven, and the vagary of momentum. I mean, Exhibit A is, well, A is an Alvarez. Yordan Alvarez comes up in June, does historic stuff as a rookie. Right now, he could fall out of a boat and he'd be bone dry, right? Couldn't hit water no matter what. 1-for-22 with 12 strikeouts. His last 56 at bats now, 28 strikeouts. I mean, mind-numbingly cold. But he's going to be in there as the Astros DH in games 1 and 2, and they're going to hope that his mind is cleansed and he's seeing different pitchers and it's a fresh start, and maybe Scherzer or Strasburg makes a mistake and he hits one 450 feet, and then, oh, Yordan Alvarez is back. But you go look at the Astros batting numbers in the league championship series, Springer, Correa, Alex Bregman's well under what he did in the regular season. Yuli Gurriel was 1-for-20 before the 3-run homer. In the first inning. So in such a short sample size, in the small series of games, there really is nothing that should stun us in terms of someone uncharacteristically getting hot, or conversely, he's really good. Why can't he do anything right now? So I think the bottom line, if you're rooting Astros or the Astros themselves, you just have that core belief that we have the best team. We have the best overall depth of players. And you just hope that within this best of seven series, that bears out. If only life were so simple.
We're talking to Charlie Polillo. He's a radio show host on KFNC here in Houston. So the bullpens, both teams have had some moments where they've been real concerns. Osuna had the meltdown the other night. Do you think Osuna's meltdown is something that carries over into the World Series?
I think, David, he'll get one chance in the closer's role, but it'll be one strike and he's out in the closer's role. I mean, he had a lousy outing in the Rays series where Will Harris actually came in and bailed him out to get the last couple outs. Then he gives up the home run to LeMahieu to blow the save, unless that was just a mastermind strategy to further the legend of Jose Altuve giving him that opportunity.
That might have been, right?
I'm pretty sure that was not the case.
It worked.
But I'll just introduce that. But Will Harris has been so great. From the start of the season until now, he is the Astros' best relief pitcher. I think at this point in time, he's the Astros' best relief pitcher. So a hypothetical I pitched out locally is, say, Game 6, the Astros lead 3-2. Verlander pitches his heart and guts out, 125 pitches, 8 innings, but he's done. And the Astros lead 2-1, three outs away from winning the World Series. If you're the manager, A.J. Hinch, in that spot right now, would you go to Osuna or would you go to Will Harris? I mean, I know Osuna's been the closer. He's been the closer all year. But sometimes you need to tear up the rule book and go with what is happening, good recency bias. But I suspect if it's a safe situation in the ninth inning, Osuna would be in there tomorrow night or Wednesday or whenever it occurs first. The Nationals, meanwhile, as you alluded to, I mean, their bullpen was a joke for most of the year. They wound up with the highest bullpen ERA of any playoff team since World War II. But they did turn over that bullpen some in the latter stages of the season. Daniel Hudson they got from the Blue Jays, he's been pretty good. A kid named Tanner Rainey, who sometimes doesn't know where he's throwing it, but he throws 100. So he's a blowtorch out of that bullpen. And then they have the lefty Sean Doolittle, who they probably would consider their best relief pitcher. I think if Strasburg, Scherzer, Corbin, maybe even Anibal Sanchez, if those guys don't go deep, the bridge guys to the late game guys who might be gettable for the Astros, but those setup guys, if the Nats are going in their bullpen fifth, sixth, maybe even as early as the seventh inning, I think it's a real opportunity for the Astros to do damage against a guy like Fernando Rodney, for instance.
And Charlie, do you see, going back to Roberto Osuna, did his struggles start when Ryan Pressly went out? You know, he's so used to being set up so beautifully by Pressly, and it seems like I can't really pinpoint what has caused Roberto's struggles. I mean, he didn't really have that last year, and it's really been odd this year. Do you think that has anything to do with it at all, Pressly's absence in the lineup?
I hadn't really considered it. Guys can be bullpen creatures of habit. That when the Astros were humming earlier in the season, it was more or less Harris the seventh, Pressly the eighth, Osuna the ninth. Osuna was great until late May. Then over the next couple of months, he just was not very good. Blew five or six save opportunities. He has really good stuff, but he's not a 100-mile-per-hour Chapman-type guy. So when the command drips on him a little bit, and he makes a mistake in the strike zone, it can get hit. 2 years ago when he was with the Blue Jays, he led the major leagues in blown saves with 10. Last year, he only pitched about a half a season, only blew one save, missing 75 games because of the domestic violence suspension. So I just think he's a closer. He's a closer. He's not a terrible closer. He's not an elite closer. And there are just very few who are total automatics. And Yankees fans can attest to that today.
Yes, they sure can. Charlie, do you see any scenario where the Astros can potentially bring back Gerrit Cole next season? I wanted a better answer.
Yeah.
I lean against.
Number one, if the Astros winning the World Series might seal the deal that he leaves.
Right.
If he checks off World Series championship, been there, done that. It's a personal decision. He and his wife grew up 4 miles from the Angel Stadium. Their off-season home is a compound in Newport Beach, right? They are Californians. So if he decides for the quality of his life as well as his pitching life, the remaining years of his prime, and oh, by the way, they come up with $275, $300 million. Right? The Angels are the team that's considered the favorite by many. They do not offer perennial contention status. The Dodgers can. So I think they're a wild card in this after going out earlier in the playoffs after the two World Series losses because, well, he'd still be pretty close to that home in Newport Beach. But if Gerrit Cole is just open to the best offer, I think it goes core against the Astros' philosophy to go 6-7 years at $35 to $40 million per year for a pitcher. Cole turns 30 late next season. The risk with pitchers' health and so forth, it's greater than with the everyday position players. But if not with this guy, now, with who? Especially if he flourishes in the World Series after what he's done the first two rounds of the playoffs. And then, David, this would be more your pay grade than mine. If you're Jim Crane and his ownership partners, do you say this is the golden age of our professional lives and of baseball in this city? And you know what? We'll forego our profits, even if he becomes a minimal loss leader. In the short term or the back end of the contract, you're thinking, well, when he's 35, is he going to be worth $40 million per year? Well, you know what? If we're winning 3-4 World Series or going to 4-5 World Series, is it worth it? And you know what? If you really need to make all that money back, they paid $610 million for it. They could probably sell it for at least triple that. Now, who knows where it'll be 5, 6, 7 years from now? Always easy to spend gobs of someone else's money. And I think the way, organizationally, from Jim Crane on down, they could not possibly have walked the walk with their plan better than they talked and laid it out when they took Houston well below the bottom, the laughingstock franchise of really professional sports, not just Major League Baseball. So to me, they should be immune from criticism if they say, we're not going to 7 years at $40 million per year. And then you weigh in income tax, cost of living, and so forth. I just think that lore of California, we don't know how driving a factor that will be in Cole's decision. I don't think the Astros are going to cheap out on an offer, but there are points in any negotiation where you have to say it's just too much.
This is The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
All right, welcome in. Great to have Charlie Polillo in, and he always has some good insights on all things baseball.
I would love to have had him for a whole nother segment. He was amazing.
Yeah, what he points out is that Gerrit Cole was a good pitcher. He became an extraordinary pitcher when he came to the Astros.
And, you know, I think Brett Strom, pitching coach for the Astros, does not get enough credit.
Yep.
I mean, you look at Wade Miley. Up until the very end of the season, people were like, what is this? Same with Ryan Pressly when we picked him up and got him in Houston. Brett Strom is the silent, just wizard with these pitchers.
The pitcher whisperer.
I mean, and Gerrit Cole was great before. Don't get me wrong. Sure. It's not like he was nobody. But he is in rarefied air right now.
Well, and Verlander, in his last little window of time in Detroit, was not pitching like Justin Verlander. And he got everything fixed when he came to Houston.
Now, one of the two of them is going to win a Cy Young, and Brett Strom should get that Cy Young as well. So credit him. He has done a phenomenal job with these pitchers. And, you know, they're able to parlay it and maybe get more money elsewhere. But, boy, those taxes in California are UGLY. So it might be nice to stay in Houston if he can. So we'll see.
All right, let's shift gears and talk a little NFL. Big day Sunday. Lots of good matchups. One big one was the Colts over the Texans. This was a big battle
AFC
in the division. AFC South showdown. Both teams needed this win, and the Colts playing at home were able to come out on top.
Yeah, they were tied for first, and not anymore. So, yeah, Colts just by a touchdown, which, you know, 30-23 Colts. Considering truly how awful the Texan played, how many self-inflicted mistakes went on, and that really probably should have been a lot. It shouldn't have been as close as it was. So as a Texans fan, you should be encouraged because, honestly, roster to roster on paper, the Texans really are better than the Colts, in my opinion, arguably top to bottom. But it comes down to execution. And when you have 10 penalties costing you 54 yards, it's really tough to win a division matchup like that or any game. They got outcoached.
So the one question, well, the one point you make about the roster is sort of interesting. Look, the thing that I would say unequivocally is the Texans have the best quarterback in that division. I would take him over to Jacoby Brissett, over Gardner Minshew, certainly, and over the only thing I would say, though, is I think that the Colts roster is very well-rounded, whereas the Texans have some weak spots. Now, the defensive secondary is a weak spot, and they took a big move today to shore that up.
Well, yesterday, they were dropping off like flies. They lost four in their secondary yesterday during the game.
Yep. So hamstring pulls, you name it.
Yes.
And so they went out and made a trade today. Another big trade by the Texans. I mean, they pick up Conley, the cornerback from the Raiders. And they give up a third-round pick for him. He was a guy who was a first-round pick a couple years ago out of Ohio State. Showed lots of flash of the promise. I mean, they're going to need him to step in right away and play this weekend against his former team, the Raiders.
Well, he will be ready right away. This is the first year. He's played six games this season. And since I'm such a lifelong Raider fan, Garen really has not been much of a contributor due to injuries until this year. It's a great pickup for Houston. It's interesting because they're facing Oakland on Sunday. So I think it's a kind of an interesting time to make a trade. But believe me, they're desperate. I mean, the Houston secondary, it just got decimated. They lost yesterday Jonathan Joseph. Bradley Roby was already out with a hamstring. They lost Philip Gaines to an ankle, Keon Crossan, and Tashaun Gibson. I mean, that is insane. And they were going up against T.Y. Hilton, Eric Ebron, that just had their usual days. So the fact that it was a touchdown that decided that game with 10 penalties by Houston and a decimated secondary, Houston fans should be encouraged.
It is a team in win-now mode. When you look at all the trades they made, well, look, Duke Johnson, obviously Laremy Tunsil was the big one. Kenny Stills came in that deal. Carlos Hyde from the Chiefs. They have used up a ton of draft capital to stock the barrel now. I mean, Gary and Conley for a third-round pick seems like, on paper, a pretty good trade. Mm-hmm. But, man, they're going to be sitting out the next couple of drafts. These next two drafts, day one and day two, they just are not in play. next year, they'll have just its second rounder on the first 2 days of the draft. So this is a team without a general manager who, which is traded.
What do you mean?
Well, so the interesting thing is there was a report today, you know, Nick Caserio was the guy that presumably was going to come in from the Patriots and play the role as the general manager of the Texans. And today there was a report that the plan to bring Caserio in as the GM is still intact, that once his contract ends in this offseason, he will come over and join the Texans. However,
they've got Jack Easterby from New England.
That's right.
Already in place.
It's Easterby, it's O'Brien. They're both from the Patriots. And, of course, they have a long-standing relationship with Caserio. And so you connect all the dots. Caserio is coming. That was the plan. However, Caserio would be coming to a team where he didn't have any draft picks. I mean, that's the fun. That's the walking into a candy store role of a general manager is you get to pick some guys to add to the team. Caserio would come with nothing to pick.
Well, you know, it remains to be seen. You never know, because 2 years ago when the Texans didn't have a pick until the third round, they got Justin Reed, and that ended up being just a phenomenal draft for them. I feel badly that we're not giving the Colts the credit. We're really focusing on the Texans because we're here in Houston, and they have so much talent, and it's just frustrating to come off of a big win against Kansas City and basically sort of lay an egg in Indy. Jacoby Brissett, he had a career day. Oh, my goodness. He took six hits from J.J. Watt alone, ended up with eight overall and a sack, and his line was 26 of 39, almost 330 yards, and four touchdowns. He had a QBR of 127. Like, what a day.
It's an amazing
and
day.
He was under a lot of pressure.
Yep.
You know, credit the Houston defense. They really pressured him, and he was able to perform. Their run game was basically taken away. Marlon Mack was not a factor. But, you know, credit Jacoby Brissett. He is now 4-0 against the Texans.
I'll concede I've been slow to get on the Jacoby Brissett bandwagon.
I know.
And some of that is, well, he's just, I look at Andrew Luck and I say, well, he's not Andrew Luck. And that's maybe not a fair comparison. But he has been impressive. It's sort of interesting. I saw a stat. Well, they call him in New England the Wolf Gang. That includes Brady.
Oh, the Wolf Pack?
The Wolf Pack. Thank you. Brady, Brissett, and of course, Jimmy G. And that threesome has been outrageously good.
I mean, yeah, you can't deny that. You've got 6-0 Jimmy G out there in California. You've got Jacoby Brissett, you know, leading the AFC South. And Tom Brady speaks for himself. And you can see it right now on Monday Night Football. But, you know, credit the Colts and credit Frank Reich. I feel like he is one of the most underrated coaches in the NFL, or at least not talked about, because he was the OC in Philadelphia when Nick Foles was the MVP and led the Eagles to a Super Bowl. He leaves, and, well, you get to talk about the Eagles in Dallas next, because I definitely want to hear from you about that. But look what he's done in Indianapolis. And this year especially, when you have Andrew Luck basically on the eve of the season, retiring unexpectedly, the Colts haven't skipped a beat.
No, it almost feels like what Sean Payton has done with the loss of Drew Brees.
Yeah, absolutely.
And in came Teddy Bridgewater, and they were able to build a scheme that really works for Teddy Bridgewater. They're 5-0. That's clearly what they've been able to do there with the Colts. Yes, give credit to him. The Eagles have taken a step back without Frank Reich, offensive coordinator.
Wow.
I mean, last night, they
You're really happy.
Well,
you're
good happy. Day for the Cowboys. I'm happy, but as a longstanding Cowboy fan,
I know where you're going.
It's my love is tempered. My excitement over yesterday's win is tempered because the Cowboys haven't shown that consistency. I mean, when they were up 3-0, yeah, I was cheering up and down, and then they lost three straight. And it's really not 100% clear what the difference was. Injuries, certainly a factor. Getting the offensive tackles back, getting Amari Cooper back yesterday, big, big deal, no doubt. But I will tell you that I mean, the Cowboys, let's talk about the Cowboys. They have this record now. They're up 4-3. They get a bye week. They're going to come back. They're going to play the Giants.
Number one in the NFC East now.
They're the number one in the NFC East. But I don't want to get carried away. I will say this. That win over the Eagles yesterday at home just felt like they held serve, to use a tennis analogy. Yeah, they won the home game against the Eagles. In another month, they're going to have to go up and play the Eagles in Philly. And that's a tough, tough environment. Always has been for the Cowboys. And if the Phillies, if the Eagles win at home in Philadelphia, well, then there we're going to be. It's going to be split And it's likely to come down to a game, maybe a division record tiebreaker scenario. I just don't think it's time for the Cowboys to be celebrating. And that's a team that seems to get satisfied with itself very, very quickly.
Yeah, you've been burned by the 0-3 Cowboys stint right there. I can feel that for you.
You can feel it there.
I'm hearing a little talk, though, out of Dallas that there could Antonio Brown be going to your Cowboys?
No. I think they're way too smart for that, right?
I don't know. I felt like listening to Jerry last night after the game. He's ready to make some changes. He's being vague, but I feel like something's a-brewing.
Well, one thing that was a-brewing last night, and I don't know what the difference was from a few weeks ago, but Kellen Moore's offensive genius seemingly returned for one night. I mean, it was there for the first three games, the creativity, the motion, the kinds of plays they were running. It disappeared for three games, and they just seemed very, very stagnant. It looked like Scott Linehan's offense, or dare I say Jason Garrett's offense. And then last night they were running some plays. That triple option they ran to Tavon Austin was really original, was really great, and it set the Cowboys up in a great position. There was some creativity yesterday that had not been there the last 3 weeks, and it's just so much of a head-scratcher to understand what the difference is in the play calling.
Well, you know, I think what I'm seeing week after week, they've got to pay Dak. This is getting out of control. I know that he is still developing, but he is not the reason they were losing. He is not totally the reason that they're winning, but you know what he did last night? He surpassed Roger Staubach's record for the most games with passing TDs and rushing TDs, 15. Pay the man. I'm over all this talk. Seriously, pay him. He does not turn the ball over. You look at Carson Wentz, who has gotten paid. And when you are paid like an elite quarterback, you need to play like one. Lead your team to win. That's what elite quarterbacks do. Wentz has been a turnover machine. He had three turnovers last night. He has not played well for several weeks, and his team is following his lead. I mean, guys are coming late to practice. They're not focused. Peterson is guaranteeing a win against your biggest division rival. It is coming apart in Philadelphia, and Dak is handling himself with poise and class. He never brings up the contract talk, and he's got a guy across from him making $100 million plus and playing like garbage. So pay Dak and get on with this. He is your guy.
Well, it is so interesting. You say pay the man. You're tired of all the talk. The talk doesn't come from Dak Prescott.
It does not come from
he
Dak
really
Prescott.
Had just
exactly.
Put his head down and played. And frankly, Jerry Jones, although he made the comment about a month ago that he thought they were close to a deal, he's gone somewhat silent. It's all the other chatter. And if, whenever he plays well, pay him. Whenever he doesn't play well, he cost himself a lot of dollars. I just know the Cowboys are going to end up paying him. That deal will get done. It's just about how big that number is going to be. And the great thing about Dak Prescott is he's got enough sensibilities, enough intangibles, enough leadership that he's not allowed that to be the distraction that, frankly, Elliott was or
right.
That you see with other players around the
with
league.
Wentz, he was a distraction to his team when he was rehabbing that ACL, which that's a whole nother thing that, you know, he has not been available. Dak is always available.
Yep.
And when you think about in the Wentz era, the success of the Philadelphia Eagles has happened when Wentz is not on the field. The Super Bowl was won, and the MVP was given to Nick Foles.
Well,
now,
and
Wentz got them there. Now, I'm not saying he hasn't done his part, but he has not brought them to the promised land.
Well, and something else you pointed out is that it wasn't Doug Peterson's offense; it was Frank Reich's offense. And of course, Reich is over there in Indianapolis now,
and that offense is looking pretty darn good.
Right.
Up against a very stout Texans defense.
All right, when we come back, we'll give you an update on Monday Night Football, the Patriots visiting the Jets. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Boston Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
This is the Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Well, I think we can shatter the myth that the Jets, after their big win over the Cowboys last week, are on a trajectory and they're going to win big and Darnold's going to turn them all around. Jets trailing the Patriots right now 17-0 as they begin the second quarter.
No, there's still time.
There's still time.
I would cool your Jets, if you know what I'm saying. Cool the Jets.
Very slick of you, I might say. I mean, the Patriots looking great again tonight. They haven't had to play a lot of competition. They're in a very weak division. The only team in that division you'd say, oh, my goodness, the Buffalo Bills. They're 5-1, but they haven't played anybody. I mean, the fact that the Bills are 5-1 is just not that impressive. They have beaten up on the Jets, the Giants, the Bengals, the Titans, and the Dolphins.
And two of those teams have not won a game in Cincinnati and Miami.
So
and their upcoming schedule isn't that tough either.
Well, okay, those are the five wins of the Bills. Who are they going to play up next?
The Eagles.
Eagles, who are struggling.
The Redskins. Yikes.
Yep.
Cleveland.
Oh, boy.
At Miami.
They get to play Miami again.
And Denver.
That team could be 10-1 when we finally get to it. I mean, those are five wins they could pull off.
Well, those five foes are a combined 8-25.
Okay.
So the Bills are set.
Bills are going to the playoffs. I mean, look, when you think about wild card, look, Patriots will win the division. But when you think about wild card positioning, you look at the other divisions are beating themselves up.
Yes, very true. AFC South, for sure.
Yep. And when we look at your AFC West, it's absolutely a very competitive. So anyway, take North. I have to say, I think the Bills are going to make the playoffs at the wild card.
They do end their slate with Dallas, Baltimore, and New England. So those are three tough ones.
They could lose their final three.
But they've got a whole season of warm-ups. Right. So there we go. Fascinating. Really does depend what division you're in.
All right, in our next hour, we're going to get to hear from Steve Garvey of the Dodgers, and we'll ask him about the upcoming series. You're listening to The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.